Right now, though, it is time. If technology works, and it's been off and on this morning, but if technology works, as we head into this last weekend of 2018, to bring in David Tarachuk with the Media Beat. David, of course, joins us live on a Friday morning. Is rebroadcast on the weekend and also during the week. David has got his own website, themediabeat.us. You can find him at Huffington Post. Also, he's also a PBS television correspondent reporting on ethics and belief. Good morning, David.
Good morning. Well, technology has brought us together successfully, I think.
For right now.
For right now. Let's keep talking while we can.
So this is it, David. This is
the end of the year.
This is it. It's here. We made it through, and it's your job to look ahead and look behind.
No, it's going to look. He's going.
Yeah, I'm getting less and less willing to look forward these days.
That would be looking forward would be foolish. So
it always is for journalists, and yet we're almost duty bound at the by convention at least, every year to do a review of some kind of a year, and most dangerously to do a prediction or set of predictions for the forthcoming year. I'm bailing completely next year.
That would just be foolish.
I'm just too much of a coward.
Anybody who goes into the prediction business now and is in the news business with what's happened over the last
needs
3 years needs their
head
or get out of the business.
Sure.
I spoke to just a random victim of this the other day who thought that she considers herself duly informed all the way across the boards. And, I mean, I've never heard such blather in my life. But that being
sure,
said.
Sure, you hear me every day.
There's blather if you want it.
Boy, well, Mr. Blather.
Well, I was not going to include you because it's so dark.
No, let's not get.
No, I wasn't going to get. Exactly right. I was just. I was shocked because I walked in here and it was the dark of the.
Well, because no one's coming in today except you and I.
Since when?
Oh, Maddie's coming in?
Yeah.
Oh, she'll light it up when she comes in.
So, and even if no one was coming in today, thank you very much. It'd be like really nice to be able to see down to the studio, but that's okay. This person was, I mean, again, is part of a demographic that's just couldn't be more informed, more available, more, you name it. And I just, as I say, I couldn't believe what was coming out of her mouth. But
in terms of predictions, you mean?
She had been turned into not so much predictions. She's just it's as though people's minds have been turned into marionettes. When I was a kid, I had a marionette set. Okay, I loved the notion of marionettes, but I was very.
You liked pulling the strings,
of course.
Somehow that doesn't surprise.
No one should be surprised by that. What and what people should further not be surprised that I have improved with age, but not in my.
I thought I saw you in The Godfather doing that marionette thing during the Feast of San Gennaro.
Right. So here's the thing with that, I am good when in my mind, but I'm not so good with the actual strings with the puppets. Okay. So as a failed.
You know what to make, what demands to make. You're not quite sure how to make them effective.
I was not, I couldn't play piano either. My left hand and my right hand were not in sync.
Okay.
All right. But still,
manually challenged,
spatially dyslexic. But other than that, really good at figuring out and that's part of what my problem is. So what we have created is instead of marionettes with strings that you can at least see, okay, this is the arm, this is the finger, this is the leg. You've got these utter tangles, right? It's like people see this one tangle and they don't know what to do with anything. And this has been created by the very people who are responsible for informing us. And
it's very hard to know which levers of power to pull if you want something to be effective or to create a certain effect. That's certainly true. That's an interesting image, the marionette with all the strings mangled up.
It's totally mangled. And now what makes it more compelling is because really we had to suck up 2 years. You'll forgive me for being blunt and cynical, my view. What I'm about to say is totally my opinion. But we had to suck up 2 years getting ready for the 2020 elections. Well, ladies and gentlemen, here we are. Except that you've got this mangled string. The marionette's fine. It's still hanging there. But you've now got a bunch of people who are already so stuck in there, in a lot of cases, misinformed view. Thank you very much, journalists. And this isn't everybody, but it's pretty sad right now what's going on. And it's very complicated to get a proper conversation going about, hey, what, because it devolves immediately into, well, I hate this person, I hate that person. So it's like, so what? Who was raised to like everybody? But that's the point of departure now.
Well, you give me a chance to talk about something I was hoping to talk about, because I've been reflecting inevitably, as lots of people have, on the, I suppose you'll call it not just the mangling, but the overall coarsening of our national discourse. And I think, you know, our president's unending assaults on the country's usually respected and I would say essential institutions are part of that, not necessarily the cause of it, certainly not the cause of it. It's been happening over time, and in a way the Trumpian atmosphere is as much a symptom. It's more of a symptom than a cause. In particular, I'm thinking, for instance, do you recall Donald Trump's attack on a judge for being, you know, for being biased in hearing Trump-related cases, the Trump University case, in fact, was the particular focus of it, and he said that the judge was going to be biased because he's quote Mexican. Well, I mean, of course, as we know, the judge is, of course, like all American judges, an American. In his case, Indiana born. And I thought of that particular nasty piece of Trumpian bigotry because I've been profiling a judge lately, an appeal court judge in the Californian courts. And I also thought about another bit of Trumpian bigotry, his various attacks on Muslims in this case, including, of course, the notorious travel ban. And why was I thinking of that? Well, inevitable, really, because the judge that I was profiling is Muslim. He's Justice Halim Danidina. He's probably, it's very hard to get a definite fact-checking process done with complete 100% confidence here, but he's probably the highest-ranking Muslim of any judge in America. He's an appellate judge, as I think I said, but he was a superior court judge in the California system for 6 years at least, and before that a very effective DA. I'm profiling for the PBS NewsHour. It'll be appearing over this coming weekend on the Sunday edition of the program, so watch that if you can. But I found him an interesting corrective to the coarsening of our national discourse, but here's how he got appointed. Here's an illuminating story he told me about him being appointed to judge in the first place. Jerry Brown, the governor of California, was of course the man who appointed him. This is back in 2012. He was a little surprised when the governor's press secretary asked him if he minded if the governor's office went ahead with publicizing his new appointment as California's first ever Muslim judge, which of course he was at the time. And he said, well, I was just overwhelmed to have the honor to be appointed. So I felt sure, yeah, whatever you want, publicize that aspect. It didn't strike me as a particularly, what did he say? He said it didn't seem to him a particularly onerous request. But he hadn't bargained for what happened, of course. He simply hadn't expected the negative reaction that greeted his appointment, along with all the many congratulations, which were highly due, of course. And these negative reactions came mainly, you're not going to be surprised by this, from the wilder reaches of the internet, and it was vicious and hateful. Among the milder epithets that were applied to him were, he was called a jihad judge. So all the hate mail and these aggressive postings they've continued. Well, they've abated since that initial peak, that spike, but they've never gone away. There are what Danadina himself calls occasional flare-ups. And, of course, he has to report them too. In his case, his personal safety is the responsibility, rather oddly, but this is California. He's in the care of the California Highway Patrol 24 hours a day. And, of course, every time another of these, one of these many flare-ups of quite clearly racial hatred come up, then of course the Highway Patrol has to investigate them. But he was good enough to have me round to his house, and we phoned him and his family. We were careful, of course, not to identify its location. All those things that I'm afraid these days you do have to take into account in an atmosphere where hatred is just a step or two away.
And I would like to just interject the having to do with how I believe you were raised, how I was raised, how Marshall was raised, how most people I know were raised, to understand that there are all sorts of different people and how cool that is. I have to make one of my usual complaints about people spending their time online talking to other people that they don't know, and saying things that they have no actual experience about, and essentially how this universe has empowered a level of impracticality that is just astounding. Because if you go...
Otherworldly, yes. It's as if people were living on separate planets, right?
Yeah, but instead, all you have to do is go outside. I mean, I'm sorry to shry, but it's just...
Sure.
You know, go walk down the street.
Have a look at reality. Yeah.
And what I find truly stunning is that the very people who were grown up, when I say grown up, I shouldn't say, who were raised tolerant, have become so wretchedly intolerant. Like, what happened?
Yeah. Yes, Justice Danadino was interesting with me. He said, you know, he's by no means a shelter. He's not exactly led a sheltered life. He was a pretty hard-nosed DA. He was in charge of prosecuting hardcore they have an interesting phrase for it in California. It's a hardcore gang division in the Justice Department. And as I say, he's tried lots of very hardcore cases. But he one of the first things he said was that, you know, when he saw what was being written about him online, he said, "These people don't know me. How could they be writing this?" Sort of almost naive, sort of. It's pretty shocking when you do find yourself in the crosshairs of these hate merchants. And I think, especially for him, he was born in Chicago to Gujarati parents who came from the Indian subcontinent, but they'd lived in East Africa before migrating to America. And there is Miley's, a particularly progressive area of division of Islam, really noted for their liberal and tolerant approaches to belief and practice. But he said that this was all the tolerance that you're talking about, that many of us were raised with. It was, in his case, driven home to me by my parents, he said, and other Ismailis who've learned that pluralism in the society is a good thing and diversity in society is a strength. And then he said to me, there's no better place to demonstrate that, really, than the United States, which at least at the time when I was born, was very welcoming to immigrants and people from different backgrounds. So, yeah, I mean, things have definitely changed.
But here's what's also frustrating around that. Once you get out of the televised politics of these people screaming at each other, and you get down, there are actually lots of... There are lots of different people in different communities, well assimilated and loved up, and they've been there for years, and they're
getting along well.
There was
even a joke made about Danadina by his former boss in the Justice Department. He said he's pretty well assimilated, considering he's a Chicago Cubs fan, Chicago in southern Mexico. So oops.
Oh, look at you. Again. No.
Cali, Mexico. No. I mustn't go along.
You
with
mustn't do sports, David, is really the bottom line.
No, I mustn't. Southern California is where L.A. is, isn't it? Isn't that right?
Yep. And so, ex-Brooklyn Dodgers. Cubbies are...
What a theft that was. Even though I know that as a New Yorker, you can't help know it, but know it as a New Yorker.
So the point being is and this is my argument just all across the board. I have no idea where the grown-ups went, but you might want to do a few stories, not you, but on people who are assimilated, functioning, welcoming, normal, rather than just a relentless 24/7 about how dreadful this is and how horrible we've all become. Because the disconnect between what is being just dribbled into, as far as I can tell, most every, but I don't know, I don't want to be totally inappropriate, information channels is quite divorced from the reality of people actually functioning in their communities. And I think that that's hideously dangerous, just in terms of exchanging necessary info for people to survive. And I you don't want to create such a situation, whoever's listening, that people don't feel safe getting their information someplace.
Right, and the unreality of it all is disturbing. I mean, one of the reasons I wanted to do this profile of Bernardino was as you say, just to reflect on the fact that there is a particular, perfectly assimilated example of a person exercising great responsibility in our legal system who's a Muslim, and then the inevitable end of that sentence is really, so what? I mean, he's doing it perfectly well, just like anybody else would do it. But on the other hand, there is all this kind of hysteria about the idea of Sharia law being somehow imported into American law. And I was astonished to discover to what degree the hysteria can climb. I had not noticed, because I'd been registering only incidental examples of this. But when you survey the scene as a whole, you'll find that 43 different states out of the United States have had bills introduced into the legislatures, a total of 200 of these bills trying to ban Sharia law from ever being invoked in an American courtroom. It's an extraordinary notion why they felt that was necessary. 13 states out of those 43 have passed such bills into actual state law now. And as Dan Dina was saying to me, here's an effort, a desperate sort of hysterical effort to find a solution to a problem that doesn't exist.
You know, it's interesting. We have a guy who owns a restaurant here, Serge Matakianis, who is Iranian, his descent.
He's Armenian.
And he just did a four-part series with a woman who did a cookbook from Iran. They were both in here, and there were no monsters. There were no things like that. You see the Iranians that come to this country, and she came to this country by moving. Her family actually lives in Vancouver first.
First
she
they
moved,
were in Rome.
And then she Rome, then Vancouver. And now she moved to the United States, where she lives. And her parents are still up in Vancouver. And it's a perfect example of people take the time to see how people do assimilate. They keep their own culture, and they live lives as Americans. And you know what? They do it seamlessly.
And we're set up that way.
Like I can't help but recall, like American, Italian American,
right.
For instance.
Irish American. Yes. But the whole thing is that it's...
Of course, I mean, the underlying theme, of course, is that race is
the underlying theme
of this,
is
yeah.
The underlying theme is there's 35% of the people in America who are ultimately racist, not only against foreigners, but anybody who's not their same color or religion. It's just, it's an unfortunate fact. I'm glad that it's out of under the cover, because for so long people have thought that this country fought racism and won. and the fight yeah. isn't the fight is
but,
never
but,
won.
But any...
and what's going to be interesting?
No, we need to be vigilant and active against it.
But how about a little more?
If we want a healthy pluralist society,
but we also need
some people, of course, don't. I mean, that's the unassailable yeah. fact that you just reminded us of. But
right,
but sure, you know the. They are a minority, I'm glad to say.
But just, I can't imagine them in 20 years when this country is a minority-led country. There's going to be more minorities than white people.
Well,
again, another reality.
But speaking of reality, yeah. right around this, it is really important to note that within various cultures, there's their own, you know, everyone has their pecking order. Let's be real. You know, if you are Japanese, then you have certain prejudice. Every group, however you
now
want to make it,
has
their prejudices against other people. It is it was ever thus. That's why tolerance, I'm sorry to sound twee, is necessary. And once again, I'm going to say, because Marshall's telling me we're out of time, that no one's learning tolerance from their newspapers. So tell us again where we can see this profile.
Oh, PBS. Local public television programs will put it out at slightly different times of the day. Here in New York, it's going out at 6 p.m. on Sunday, but it's going out on the Sunday edition of the PBS NewsHour Weekend. It's known as on Saturday and Sunday, but it's a Sunday edition. It's early evening. Some stations put it out at 5:30. I don't know what it is in Connecticut, but I would take a guess and say it's either 6 or 6:30 in the evening.
All right, we're going to tell everybody, please find that. And we are going to say to you, as ever,
speak to you next year.
Thank you very much. David Tereshchuk, The Media Beat.
Thank you.